Bonnie Gani, everyone. This is Professor Amin-Ra, Professor Emeritus, California State University of Long Beach Africana Studies Department, former city councilman for the city of Compton, former Compton College Board of Trustees, and former Compton Unified School District Board of Trustees. We want to welcome you here to the Conscious Corner, where we do a critical analysis about what's going on with Black people, especially African-American people. We look forward to your deep thinking and your analysis and feedback from our guest speaker, who is one of the royalties of the Cal State Long Beach, who is one of the premier leaders of rebuilding the Black United Front in Los Angeles, as well as the Sisters of the Revolution at Cal State Long Beach, as well as a president of the Black Studies Student Association. She's a PhD professor at, she'll tell you the university. I can't remember all of that, but she's a professor now. And he went on and got a PhD, operates one of the most major nonprofit organizations that deal with education of Black people. And she's been to the White House and on special governmental boards and things of this nature. So we asked her to come and talk about the state of Black students with regards to discipline and with regards to how she sees education with regards to this present administration. Without further ado, we're going to get started with Dr. Rosemary Allen.
Thank you, Professor Ra. It is such an honor to be here and to be in your presence today. I'm going to talk about the discipline of Black children in America's public schools, and actually private schools as well. And what we know, and we rarely talk about, is what we lost during that Brown versus Board of Education decision. Malcolm X said only a fool would send their children to their enemy to be educated. And we have been doing this since 1954. And we've been collecting the data on how our children have been treated since 1973, when the Children's Defense Fund ran the first suspension study that showed that Black children were suspended about four times more than their white counterparts. Before that, there's a study called the Pygmalion Theory that talks about how Black children were treated in their classrooms right after the Brown versus Board of Education decision. And it showed that they were criticized more, subjected to corporal punishment more, ignored more than white children. And this was so amazing to me, little Black girls who were smart were treated worse than anyone. So we have this data from back then. So let's talk about how it plays out now. So consistently since 1974, we know that Black children are suspended more than any child in this country, and Black boys more than anyone. Now, the shocking—
Go ahead.
The shocker is how young they start getting kicked out of school. Our Black children start getting kicked out of early childhood programs starting at 8 months old. Mm. 8 months, usually for biting and crying. Mm. And it's really amazing because early childhood teachers know that biting and crying at 8 months old is typical. So what's happening that they're kicking our kids out? And what we know, it is racism. We started with implicit bias, but we know how they view Black children as pathological, and they other them, and then they kick them out because they don't feel like they belong. So we know this happens beginning at 8 months. They get kicked out at one for maybe biting or pulling somebody's hair, at two for throwing tantrums, at three for being out of control, at four for being defiant. So by the time a child reaches kindergarten, they've already disengaged from learning. So when you look at what we call the achievement gap, and we actually know it's an opportunity gap, because children achieve and learn in whatever environment they're in. And what these children are learning is that school is not safe, I do not belong, teachers don't like me, and they withdraw. And Ra, there's a really interesting study conducted by Dr. Dariel Blevins. She conducted research on middle school girls who were suspended and kicked out of middle school, and found that most of them were kicked out of preschool and decided that no teacher would ever treat them like that again. They were harshly disciplined, they were picked on, they were singled out, and by the time they got to middle school and found their voice, they didn't put up with it. So they were labeled as being defiant and hostile and belligerent, but what they were really doing, based on research, was standing up for themselves. So, should I stop? Any questions so far?
I just have one, Dr. Allen. What about putting special ed in because me and Matt Calvin went to elementary school, and we both were put in special ed at Ritter and Watts. And Matt Calvin went on and graduated from SC and became a professional basketball player, and as you know, I graduated with honors from Cal State Long Beach. But they just came in and just started counting and said, "You go, you go, you go." Is that a way of making Title I money or dealing with just filling up a special ed program?
Well, actually, it started right after, again, Brown versus Board of Education as a tool to resegregate. They did not want black children integrating and going to school with white students, so they began to create special ed classrooms to put black children in those classrooms to separate them from the general population and to label them, because we know that that door to special ed is open, wide open, but the exit is very narrow. So few children come out of special ed in the ways that you did. Actually, by the time I came up, and we're about I'm about 14, 13, 14 years younger, they before they could put you in special ed, there was a law passed that said you had to take an IQ test. And when they were going to put me in special ed, they gave me the IQ test. And when they saw the score, they knew they couldn't do it. So then they skipped me a grade. And you remember those AB classes? Anybody remember? You were in either A, like A9 or B9. So then they did another half year. So it started out to resegregate. And then the Title I funding and all of that came later. But really, it was a tool to resegregate schools and keep black children away from white from their white peers.
What about corporal punishment?
Whew. Yes, Lord, corporal punishment. Again, we look at the data. Before they started banning corporal punishment, black children were beaten more and more severely with more long-lasting wounds than any other children. And I don't know if people know that corporal punishment is still legal in public schools in 18 states and private schools in 48 states. So children can still be beaten at school. And you know what's amazing? Just think about this. If I took a wooden stick and hit my child with it and left marks, they would turn me over to Child Protective Services. But they can continue to do it in public schools. And again, black children, especially in the South, again, are beaten more often and much more severely than white children are.
Ernest, do you have any questions or statement?
No, because to me it's kind of new, because I came up in school like kindergarten and say like 1943. And then I've always, I've never had a black teacher. And all my classes, it was always mostly white and maybe one or two black. There wasn't that many blacks in Long Beach, during the 30s and 40s. And so so to me, and then all my friends, that I kind of met and grew up with, they were came from the South. Like Texas and Tennessee, Louisiana, and stuff like that. And they tell me these stories about black teachers and stuff. And to me, that was amazing because I never saw one in my schooling, not till I got to college, to Cal State Long Beach, So to me, it's all like, because I'm 87 now. So to me, this is all kind of new. And then my dad always fought, he would, he founded the Long Beach branch of the NAACP in 1940, and he was always on it, you know, so I didn't get any trouble in school. You know, I used to fight quite a bit because, you know, I didn't take nothing off the white kids, you know, because I didn't figure there was no white person that could beat me doing that. I grew up like kind of Dr. Ross. So, you know, I defend myself in the minute, so I never had any trouble in school. So to me, this is kind of really, I don't know, just throws a different light on thing, because I, you know, like being unaware, that's why I'm in programs like this. I know that stuff goes on and I've heard about it, but you know, just to me, it's kind of different here.
And you know what's so amazing, Ernest, is that there are parents right now today with children who are getting in trouble, and they don't know the data, and they don't believe their children. So when a child comes home and says, "Mom, Hunter and Parker were doing the same thing, and they didn't get in trouble." I'm sorry, I'm the only one who got in trouble. The parents don't know that this is happening. And so what's happening, the child's in trouble at school, so school is toxic, and then they get in trouble at home. Because you can imagine, especially for young children, just imagine any child between 3 and 7. If they get suspended, their parents, their mother or father have to take off work. And so what we're finding too is that suspended children are disciplined more at home as well. So okay, you could imagine that black mama, "Boy, you better not go to school and act up, because I can't take off work today. If I take off work, I'm gonna beat your butt."
Get so, that from you know, mama over here.
That's it. So that's what's happening. And as a result of that, what we're seeing, and this is the saddest part, is that the suicide rate for black boys between the ages of 5 and 12 are skyrocketing. See, because school is toxic and home is toxic. They don't have a safe place to go. So this is why we need to talk to families. When that teacher shows up to tell you something negative about your child, first you talk to your child and you develop a relationship with that teacher so that your child knows that they're protected. I mean, it doesn't mean we lower behavioral expectations. Those of you who are teachers, we know we got some kids who can act up. But we also know, and Ra, this is why I love the work that your son is doing. When you have relationships with those kids and you are what we call a warm demander, and they know you care about them and love them, they perform. They perform for you. Okay. But by the same token, when they know you don't care, they're going to act up.
Well, you know, I saw a change, and I'm gonna get to Ahi and then Mashinda, and then when I used to go to school, parents used to tell the school, "If they act up, I give you my permission to beat that butt, and I'm gonna beat his butt when you get home, or her butt." Second, do you have a issue of a different generation? Now the generation is, "Don't touch my child." You understand? It's a change, because I taught in public high school, elementary, junior high, and high school. And, you know, some of the parents, they'll tell you, "Don't put your hands on my baby." Even though he's, you know, 14, 15 years old. She still see him as her baby. And so that was a big change to me. And I'll get back to those things later. Brother Ahi? Detroit.
Hello to everybody this evening. This is once again a really wonderful subject matter. Here, my personal experience is I was loved and protected all through school. I had a few white teachers and some white teachers, and when I look back on it, you know, most of our teachers were black, and a lot of them were from the hood, from our neighborhoods. We used to see some of them at the stores, in the grocery stores. And I know they kept them in check. And they had a lot to do with tweaking the agenda the class schedule, the classes, lessons, and we were embraced in love. That's why I'm kind of on the fence with the corporal punishment, because some of the knuckleheads I went to school with, that's what really, just the thought of them having to have a consequence for their actions kept them in line. Yeah. But it was all done with love. From elementary school to middle school, when I first started encountering more different Hispanic and students of European descent, all through high school. The first time I was called a nigger was in Orange County when some white boy stuck his butt out the window. And I was walking to work, and like a fool, I'm running down the street chasing a car full of white boys. So, you know, I was foolish, but it was shocking. it was shocking to for somebody to even have said that to me. But my experience was when I look back on it now, we were genuinely loved.
Yeah,
because everything was just done from the community. Mm-hmm. So it's a little different from the experience in California, which when I became a young man and had to go out there and see it, it is the South. It is Southern California. Yeah. And so that's my personal experience with our public education system.
I love what you said. And that is what we see, that Black teachers were invested in Black children. Their success was intricately intertwined with the child's success. They lived in the neighborhood, they knew the family, and they kept them in check in the neighborhood. I did a little research in South Africa, because when I went there, I found that no matter how poor those children were, there was joy. And there was this community. And in looking at the source of joy, what happened is exactly what you said. The teachers and everyone created that community where the entire village, and I know white folks have totally appropriated, you know, it takes a village to raise a child, but truly teachers were part of that village and they lived right there. And nobody was coming in from the outside telling these kids that they needed special ed, that they lived in poverty, that they were at risk or disadvantaged or any of that. And what they did was lift those children up.
And I want to ask you, my sister, in a way, is what Donald Trump doing, can that really work in our, to our benefit? For us to gain more control of what our children learn and to create a curriculum that's going to help liberate them?
We would be foolish if we don't take advantage of it. Because with them going to a voucher program, and they're going to vouchers, and when they use those vouchers and take all that money out of public school, what are we going to be left with? So my question is, how are we positioning ourselves to create freedom schools so we can teach our own children? Ra, I'm thinking about the school Reed.
Children's Space.
Powerful African-centered school. When and how do we start to create those schools? So when the voucher programs become available, that we tell Black folks, bring your vouchers here, because we're going to take care of your kids. So yes, this is an opportunity. And you know, because I worked in the Obama administration, people are expecting me to be so sad about what Donald Trump is doing with the Department of Ed and dismantling it. That department never worked in our favor.
True.
Why in the world would I fight for a department that has done nothing but oppress our children?
Right?
Yes, we have a new opportunity. I'm with you on that.
Right, because you know the Muslims, they got the same kind of thing going, and they're educating their own children right now with the money that they're using, where we're supposed to be sent to the public school system. But they're taking those, like you said, those vouchers. The Muslims are taking advantage of it, and all these white institutions are taking advantage of it. Mm. And I think that we need to get our stuff together and take back control over what our children are learning.
I agree with you.
Yeah, but Hakeem Mahadibuti, Institute of Positive Education, I was just on a program with him. He They got four schools in Chicago. I think they went charter, but they used to have their own private schools under the Institute of Positive Education. And he always taught that you never send your kids to be taught by people that don't love them. And so, he was on celebrating Malcolm X's birthday, and he was talking about his history as far as the Institute of Positive Education, Third World Press, and all the things that they're doing in Chicago. And have Mashinda. Mashinda, you there? You're on mute.
Yeah, I'm here.
Talk about the South, Virginia. Talk about Louisiana.
Dirty South. Let's talk about the dirty South. Well, down here, I'll just look at the, I have a background in education, many years. So the local, the K through 12 will deal with the local school district. The white folks, and I'm speaking of the white folks, they believe in segregation still. They don't want to, it's the poor whites that don't have transportation and so forth and other issues. They continue to go to the local schools. There were several elementary schools, a junior high, and a high school in these parts. And so a lot of the schools have been closed down because of the fact that lack of student population. White folks, they're going outside the city limits and going to some of the private schools or some of the outside public schools that, so in other words, it's a transportation issue. The voucher system would be great down here as well, if there was transportation. But again, I think that it's underdeveloped. The thinking and the mindsets are underdeveloped in terms of creating schools of our own and that type of thing to become, independent school district or independent schools, maybe to take advantage of these vouchers. But, other than that, it's not the voucher system here. Although it can be a good situation for some, down here. It's so anyway, majority of the black folks, in Southeast Louisiana, they go to public schools, and you have some schools that have the tax base are better than others in terms of resources and things like that. But in a lot of the little towns and things like that, where it's majority black schools, I don't know how they're cutting up the pie, but it's kind of like a lot of the districts are top heavy. The administrators, they make very good salaries, and that's the argument, that they say, hey, the administrators, the principals and the administrators, they make a lot of money, but the kids still, they go without a lot of resources, textbooks, so forth, But anyway, talk about the corporal punishment in Louisiana. They have about, I think there's almost, I guess, 27 or 30 school districts, in different parishes that promote that allow corporal punishment. But it's generally banned overall. You don't see any, but you don't hear about anybody getting beat down or hit or paddled in these school systems around here. I'm sure the kids these days aren't having that, and the parents aren't having that. So I don't know where they're doing that, but it's probably at, like you said, those private schools. But these public schools in the inner cities in New Orleans and down here on the other side of the lake from New Orleans, they're not hitting anybody, because these kids, that again, the families aren't going for that. Now, corporal punishment is as far as, like, say for instance, certain schools are all black. Well, it's a few whites, don't get me wrong, but majority black, and they're not going for any corporal punishment. But it's allowed in the state if the parents sign a consent. There's a form that they have to fill out and have to be in agreement. And of course, the school has to, again, but I don't know any school district or any schools that are paddling children. You know, I just, I mean, I've been around for a while and I haven't heard that, oh yeah, they're over there paddling the schools or paddling the kids at that particular school, you know, that kind of thing. So there's not, hasn't been any outrage about that. Okay. So all in all, I'm just saying that I'm sure that, you know, I mean, again, I like the subject matter and there's some value in what I'm listening to. And I appreciate the guests coming on and talking about this. But Louisiana is just, and again, I'm always talking about, you know, in the general area where I'm at in Southeast Louisiana, you don't hear about corporal punishment and white folks, they keeping it segregated. And they do have these private schools and we can go there. Even if it's a voucher, we don't have the transportation to get there to certain schools that might be of value. So that's all I wanted to add right now, but I'm enjoying the conversation.
All right, Linda?
Yes, I'm here. And
you have any questions or comments?
No, I only have a couple, but I'm loving this. And I'm in, like you said, the dirty South, and I wish I could have gotten on, but my computer keeps giving out. But I definitely will have to listen to this over and over and over. But I only have just a couple questions, so I'm agreeing with loving this. But are you a part of NAPSE or Chica Akua's teacher transformation programs?
I am not. I'd love to know more about it.
Okay, yeah. NAPSE, of course, is the National Association of Black School Educators. And then Chica Akua has, well, he's teaching, training the teachers around the country, the Black teachers, and especially saying the same thing that you're saying, and on another tone and another level. And I'm going to get your information from Amin Ra later, because I'm so sorry I just had it because my computer keeps giving out. So, but I had to hear this, and I'm definitely going to listen again and again because you are so on point. Mm-hmm. I love it
so much. I'm a member of the National Black MBCDI Child Development Institute. And I have worked with trainers all over the country. But, you know, I love what you're saying, and I'm very interested in the trainer who's training Black teachers.
Yes. Because
the other thing we don't talk about is undoing the internalized racism we have towards our own children. You know, and sometimes the way that they're treated. And I know we don't like to talk about it, but it happens, and they are suspending children as well. So we have to talk to our own folks.
Oh, definitely. Yes.
As well as these white teachers. And as we talk to Black teachers, to encourage them to step in, to interrupt, to disrupt the racism that they see. So many times they don't say or do anything.
Yes. May I ask one other question? What about the homeschool communities? Are they available? Are they eligible for vouchers?
You know what, that's going to be interesting. I don't know, but I do know that Black children are being homeschooled now more than ever. Yes. There's a whole association for that. And it may be good to tap into that homeschool community. And what I love what Mashinda said is that this is so underdeveloped, but the homeschool community, they have developed curricula and everything. They're doing a great job.
Yes.
But what if we tap into that, bring that homeschool community into the brick and mortar and learn some of what they're doing at home, because they're keeping their kids at home because they don't want them subjected to the racism that they're incurring. That they're
absolutely in yes.
School, so, yeah.
You have another question then?
Oh, no, that was it. I'm just okay. So impressed and learning so much what she said, especially going back with the children, 8 months. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Arasha Key, you there?
Yes.
You have any questions? You're a teacher?
Yeah, no. I thought it was interesting things are being said, especially when Mashinda was talking about the voucher system. But I would want to know, you know, since the type of society we live in, is it a reflection? The things that are happening to the Black children is a reflection of just how society is in general.
Well, yeah. We live in a racially structured society. Our schools are racially structured. Our schools were never designed for Black children to succeed ever. So I think when you look at how, and it's interesting about the South, how public school was created on the backs of Black people. Those who were formerly enslaved wanting education for their children. So when you look at the history of public schools, it really came about that way. But when they were created, then they privileged white children. So, and of course, they were going to their own schools, but they weren't public schools. So definitely a reflection of what's happening. And Mashinda, when you talked about schools being so segregated, not only are schools still segregated, more segregated than Brown versus Board of Education during that time, but not only are schools segregated, but neighborhoods are segregated. So there's not a lot of interaction between white folks and people of color, especially Black children. And because white teachers come into these classrooms through using their own cultural lens is why so many Black children get in trouble. I'm a teacher education professor, so I train those who are going to become teachers. So let me just tell you the story. One of my students came in, she talked about this unruly little Black girl. Unruly, she never listens, she's defiant, she does whatever the heck she wants to do. So I said, okay, I'm going to come in and observe so I can see what's going on. Little girl, about 6 years old, first grade. So I go in, and my little student, the little girl's name was Rebecca. Rebecca walked past somebody and slapped him upside the head. She goes, Rebecca, do you think it was okay for you to slap him on his head? Rebecca, ah! She goes somewhere else and she snatches a toy from a kid. Rebecca, if you want something, what should you do? And Rebecca went over there and kicked somebody. Rebecca, if you're upset, do you think you should use your words? So this went on, and I'm just watching this, thinking, what in the world is this? Because you know when you think you taught somebody better. So after a while, she turns to me, totally exasperated. I says, see, Dr. Allen, she won't do anything I ask her to do. No matter what I tell her to do, she won't do it. And I had to point out, you did not tell her to do anything. You asked her opinion about everything, and she gave you her opinion. When you said, do you think it's okay to hit your friend? It was okay with her to hit her friend. So she goes, well, what do I do? And so I modeled it. And Rebecca, you know how kids know who's got the juice. She looked at me and she walked over to me with a toy she had just taken from a kid. And she goes, hey, miss, you want this toy? And I said, I don't want it. Rebecca, what I want you to do is walk back over there to the kid you took it from and give it back right now. And she went and took it back. And my student was like, how did you do that? And I said, well, are you pleased with her behavior? No. And I said, then wipe the smile off your face. Do you want her to do something? Yes. Then tell her exactly what you want her to do. Stop trying to be friends. And so just imagine now Rebecca was labeled defiant and uncooperative because all this time she thought she had a choice. And she didn't. Now, of course, she knew better than to hit and kick and do all that, but she was getting away with it. So this is why we have to train these teachers about our own cultural ways of being. And don't give a choice where there is none. Don't ask a child, would you like to stop playing basketball? Let me tell you another one. This one was about basketball. We went in to find out why so many Black boys were being kicked out of the school. We stayed for a week. And what we found out was that most of them were suspended and expelled because of playground incidents. Digging deeper, we found out it was during basketball. So these young boys, they were middle schoolers playing basketball. The teachers on the playground, they were aides. They didn't know the kids. They were like playground supervisors. And these kids were playing street ball. And you know how our young boys play street ball? They fouling and talking and just, you know, all signifying, doing all that stuff they do, which scared the white aides. So they would go over and say, you cannot threaten, you cannot cuss, you cannot do this, you can't threaten to hurt somebody. And the kid is like, I didn't threaten to hurt nobody. Are you calling me a liar? I heard you. Yeah, you're a liar. And before you know it, now there's this confrontation between this aide and the kids because the kids are just being themselves and the age are labeling their behavior. So we took this to the district and said, this is what we're seeing. That first, they don't know the kids. Secondly, they're labeling their behavior. And third, they fear them. So they try to create a new rule. So the new rule for basketball is that you have to play NBA basketball, not street ball. And I said, oh, no, 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 no. That's not the rule. Why do they have to change who they are for you? You're the guest. This is their school, their neighborhood, their rules when they play basketball. How about we train the teachers not to fear them? How about we train the teachers not to suspend them or expel them when they're playing ball the way they do in their own neighborhoods? So you see what happens? That cultural disconnect that causes them to kick our children out and expel them because they don't understand the behavior.
Okay. Hey, Rose, you got another Colorado fella here.
And that's my buddy there.
Brother Kumba Omar Montgomery. He's over diversity at Cherry Creek. What is your position on discipline and what's going on in the schools at, in Cherry Creek, Kumba?
First of all, it's an honor to be here. Pops, it's good to see you, and it's always good to see Dr. Allen and everyone else that's on here. In regards to everything that Dr. Allen said, that still stands in our district. All my years being NAACP president, I've never had anyone call about a Black teacher or a Black principal, ever.
Wow.
Generally, never. It's either been, it's mostly been a white teacher, similar to what you described, and a Black student. And you are seeing more parents deciding to homeschool because the punishments are getting harsher in school to the point where you end up with a criminal record. And it also depends on who catches you. Is it the officer that catch you that's on campus? Is it the dean that catch you? And is it, or is it the teacher? And depending on which one catch you could determine how this is going to end. Is it going to end in court with a citation? Or is it going to end right there in the dean's office where there could be a conversation with the parents and move forward? So those are real things. And in regards to, I know you asked me about the DEI, State of Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser has already filed several lawsuits to protect DEI in the state of Colorado. Several of the superintendents have gotten together and have not, the major of the major districts have gotten together and has not made any changes and committed so far to keeping things are the way they are until there's a Supreme Court decision. And so right now, Colorado have some people that standing up, but we need that to trickle down into those areas that Dr. Allen was talking about. It's not just about saying you support DEI and things of this nature. Do you support teachers when they bring issues to you as a principal? Do you stand by them? Are you going to listen to them? Or are you going to say this is a safe space to talk? And then when they do talk, you punish them because you don't like the way it came out. And that's similar to how we do our students. So it's not just the students that are impacted by some of these issues, it's also our teacher. I know I went off on the tangent, but just wanted to put that out there.
Okay, Rose, I have a couple quick questions, a few questions. What is the difference between charter and vouchers?
Well, charter schools are approved by the school district, and help me out on this too, Omar. They're approved by the school district, but they can act independently. They have different hiring rules. They bring in their own staff. Some of them are nonprofits and they have boards and things like that. So a voucher, so every school across this country, they have a per pupil payment. So I think Colorado is like $6,000 per child per year. So what this voucher program will do is say, you don't have to go to your public school. We'll give you a $6,000 voucher and you can go anywhere you want to. So if I take my $6,000 voucher because I have more money, I'm affluent, I can take my $6,000 voucher and I could take it to Colorado Academy, which is a $50,000 a year private school. So all of these parents who don't want their kids in these public schools, they can take their money out and it's only going to leave poor children of color in the public schools. So instead of giving, so they're still going to give the money to the schools unless parents use their voucher to take it out. Omar, did you want to add to that?
No, I think you explained it
All right. And the other
great.
question, though, is that some argue that, like, I went out to some Orange County schools and San Diego School District and Irvine School District. They have a lot of vocational programs, such as aquatics, and then they have making movies, and then they have computer technology, not just computer learning. And they argue that sometimes homeschool just deal with the basics, math, reading, writing, and the students don't have the opportunity to learn about vocational opportunities that they used to have in school. And then they have in some public schools, you can go to college while you're in high school. How do you respond to those different programs?
What I love about the homeschool movement is that that child is still part of their home public school. So I can homeschool my child on the basics and send them to local school for those co vocational programs. They still have a right to access their school and their public education. So that's one of the things I would tell people. First, if you want your child to learn about plumbing or informational technology systems, send them there for that one or two class for one or two classes, and then do the rest at home. So that's one thing. And then what was the other one you said?
Concurrent enrollment.
Say it again. Concurrent enrollment. So even homeschoolers can do that. I did that with my son. And so but see, there's some catches in concurrent enrollment. So what I did with him is when he was in high school, I enrolled him in the community college and I paid for it. If you do it through the school and they pay for it, then there's some limitations. So what happened, he was able to go into Howard University as a transfer student because I paid for it. They don't let you go in as a transfer student if this high school pays for it. Is that amazing?
And he went on to be an attorney. He just
Yes,
graduated from law school
he
and gave an
did.
amazing speech. What was that at the graduation, or was that at
It
the
was the
back
hooding.
graduation?
It was at the hooding ceremony.
And then, oh, that was beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Everybody's streaming it and sharing it on the internet because he blew it away, and that was
He
excellent.
did.
The
He
other
did.
concern, Rose, is, you look at some people argue that public schools would hurt poor black people because they do not have the money or the transportation to go out to better schools. And so you have to still deal with public schools, like people in the projects, people in very poor areas. Second, there's a issue with dealing with single parents, and then there's the two parents working. That all affects the African American community with regards to and other minorities. I mean, so some people are just forced to go to their local schools because they don't go there because they want to. It's convenient, so.
And well, when you think about it, that's the same argument that we had for Brown versus Board of Education. And if we don't learn from our history, we're going to repeat this. For me, the answer, the solution is not going outside of your neighborhood to school. The answer is bringing your local school up to the standards that you have for your community. That's the key, because shipping our kids to these white affluent schools did not help them at all. Actually, the opposite is true. I did it. My son was right here, went to this all lily white school, and what that did to him, in terms of who he was as a black male on campus, which is why college was much, his concurrent enrollment was much better because he went to a more diverse community college. So I think the answer is, what do we do with our own schools? How do we take advantage of the vouchers? This whole idea of dismantling the Federal Department of Ed and dealing with governors, we have more access to governors than we did that Department of Ed. How do we, and Omar, you are amazing at this, how do we influence policy at the state level to do something about our local schools? And that's what we're going to have to do. We're going to have to bring them up for all the reasons that you talk about. The kids are there, the families are there, these are our communities. Do you remember, anyone remember in Inglewood, California, where they had this special program where they had affordable housing for teachers? And it didn't last long, but
The teacher next door.
yes. So why aren't we doing that? Let's bring our best and our brightest to these neighborhoods. Let's give them affordable housing so that they can afford to teach in their own neighborhoods. Let's create these parent councils, because I'll tell you something, nothing's more powerful than white women and PTA. Seriously, two white women got most of the books banned in this country. But how do we build strong coalitions of black families? And what you said about two single mothers, we're their best partners. I mean, I think about when I was teaching right there at Drew, right there on 100 and what, 118th and Central. My parents were my partners, and so many of them were single. We're partnering and raising these children together. And that's the kind of environment we have to create. And that gets rid of don't touch my child, don't say nothing to my child, and all this craziness. Because I'm in this together with you. I remember when we had this rule about children talking to the teacher. If you need help, come to the teacher. I had a couple of parents that said, "You're teaching my children how to be snitches, and we don't snitch." And we had to come up with another way for children to get assistance when they needed it so they didn't get kicked out of schools. So transportation could be an issue, and it is an issue. So how about raising this standards there? I tell my white teachers all the time, don't go into these schools talking about my classroom, my school, my rules. You're a guest. You're on the B team. Our families are on the B team. They'll be there when you come and be there when you leave. So you act like a guest and you learn how they do it. So I don't know if that answered or not. I know I went off on a tangent because I
Well,
feel passionate.
they're trying to give incentives because they're saying that a lot of people don't want to be teachers, and they're offering incentives. Have you got any info on that?
Oh yeah, there's a program and it's at my university called Call Me Mister. All of you need to look it up. Just Google "Call Me Mister." Let me tell you, if you call me Mister Colorado or Mile High, Call Me Mister. These black men are bringing black men in education at astronomical rates, and they're recruiting all over the country. So y'all, if you know any black boys, black men, high schoolers who want to become teachers, we give them free tuition, free room and board, free clothing allowances, and free food. We take care of all their needs. There we go. That's it. Scroll down. It's amazing. And they're recruiting right now. So these are the incentives. They're placed right away once they graduate. See them down there? Those are all my nephews. Look at them. So if you get a chance, take a look at this. And they are changing teaching black men. And look at this one. Look at all those mentors. They came from all over. And where's my Louisiana person? About a third of these guys are from Louisiana, some from Baton Rouge. They're from all over.
That's great.
There's Clemson, Morris, all over the place. So Rod, those are some of the things that we're doing. We don't have a similar program for Black women, but you know, we need to. At least we're doing something.
Now, what program? I know you go all over the country speaking. Kuma and you both do that. About the parent role, because see, people argue that there's a large percentage of Black children that are in foster home, placement home, or living with relatives that don't have a heavy emphasis on their education. They're just collecting the money, or they just, you know, just don't get in trouble. Now, my response, are there any family assistance training programs? Because, you know, my position is always, it's my responsibility to teach my kid to go to school prepared and wanting to learn. I got to instill that in a culture of their own. But most people just use schools as babysitting places and placeholders. How do you respond to that?
There's a nationwide organization. I'm trying to look it up right now. Black Parenting. Omar, you know, they meet at Senator Fields Community Center. Chanel, she runs it. The Black Parenting Network.
And they do a lot of work in the community. And there's also some other groups, Compound for Compassion. They help parents who are facing trauma and give them counseling so that they are caregivers counseling so that they can do the best they can to help their kids. You're seeing that a lot at the grassroots level, and you have this national organization where there's a strong emphasis on not just parenting, but also working with caregivers.
Yes. Can you repeat the name of that organization? Can you repeat that, please?
I'm putting the link in the chat, blackparentnetwork.org.
Thank you.
So that's one of them. And the other thing that we're doing, Raw, too, for our nonprofit, we have an early childhood mental health team under our health and wellness program. And if a child is at risk of being suspended or being harshly treated or anything like that, they call us and we have a rapid response. And we go out and we meet with the teachers, we meet with the principal, the parents, and then we get together and we create a plan for that child to prevent suspensions. And then we provide support to the family. Because see what we're doing, we're asking parents to return to the scene of their own trauma. Most of these families, the parents have been suspended or kicked out themselves or didn't have a good experience at school. So we have to help them recognize that as well. So that's one of the things that we do. And we have a program called CDOT, Directors.C, Directors, Owners, and Teachers of Color. So that's a whole network of providers and teachers. And we get together and we talk about what their needs are, because we keep asking teachers to do more and more with less and less, and the pay is abysmal. So we need to make sure we're supporting our teachers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but see, I was of the opinion that children that are in foster care or placement home, that there should be more standards for those people that are operating. Because the biggest homeless, one of the biggest country of the homeless is 18-year-olds that are no longer eligible for foster money or placement money. And these people just let them do what they want to do as long as they're getting their check. Mm-hmm. And not all of them, of course, but some of them. And they're not vested in the kids' education because they're not their biological kid.
Right. Mm. And it's unfortunate, Rob, but we don't have a lot of safeguards and supports and accountability systems for that. And California pays a whole lot of money for foster children. So that the money incentivizes. One good thing is that if a child has ever been in a foster system, they go to school free. They get their college is free. And most people don't know that. So that's something to look into and really try to somehow access these kids who are aging out of the foster system to make sure they understand that they can go to college and do so free of charge.
Anyone else have any other questions or comment?
Thank you so much for this information.
Hey, on the screen. No problem. The Dr. Brooks, who's on the Black Family Network, Dr. Brooks is a activist, a parent activist, education activist here in Colorado. But Pop, she knows you because she was doing work in Compton, California, Dr. Mm-hmm. Joyce Brooks. Mm-hmm. And she speaks very highly of you, but she's a lot of that work. She's doing some amazing work out here and is part of that family, the one that you put up, Dr. Allen. And I don't know if you worked with Dr. Joyce Brooks as well and some of the work that you do, Dr. Allen.
Yeah, we keep saying we're going to get together and it just hadn't happened yet. Yeah.
Okay. One other thing. Can you please, Amarai, pass you the information onto your phone if you'll pass it on to the doctor, please?
What's that?
About the Teacher Transformation Network.
Okay, let me.
This is called the Teacher Transportation Institute by Chika Akua. I send it on to you and Rashkeed.
Wonderful.
And one quick question. You ever hear of a school in Philadelphia called Imhotep?
I have. I haven't had a chance to visit it, though.
It's one of the most remarkable schools, independent charter. They're number one academically. Their kids are networking with Africa. They send material, food, and clothing. They're number one in the sports in the state. And it's named after the multi-genius African Imhotep. Mm-hmm. And it's an all-Black school, mainly. And they're really performing well. You remember Dr. Anya Pollard, who operated Marcus Garvey in L.A. Omar went there for a little while, and then my daughter went to Children's State. But my point is that, they didn't have credentialed teachers at these private schools, these kids would teach. It was into geometry and everything at the eighth grade and stuff like that. I mean, they just expanded their minds and things, you know. And so I'm just saying that, a lot of the independent schools, the Imhotep Academy, home of the ultimate student.
And see, this is what we need to study. I do believe, I'm just writing this down. I do believe that our Robert C. Smith School is patterned after this. Our founders went and visited the school to really set up the curriculum for the school that's now here.
Colorado?
Yeah, and I think this is what we have to do. We have to go to these schools. We have to learn about them. We have to find out what they did and how they did it so that then we can replicate it.
Well, okay. Any other questions, comments? Well, listen, Dr. Allen, you've been beautiful as always with your presentation. Tell Don I say hello. And tell your son we're going to have him on and talk about social justice, which is his thing. That's one of the reasons he became an attorney.
Yeah.
And we're going to get Kauma back to talk about diversity in the school district. So, we're going to put a strong emphasis on education attainment, training, and the role of parents, specifically our guardians of children, and really pushing education. I know you pushed it for you, your daughter, and your son, Kauma, his mom. And, I was always on in education with him. We just got to get more people seeing the value of education. You know, people just say, I got to go because it's the law, you know, instead of saying, hey, look, man, this, I don't have no time to waste. I mean, you're going to be there 6 hours a day, and you might as well get more out of it than it gets out of you. But we want to thank you, Dr. Allen and Akuma and all the listeners today for tuning in. Rasha Key, you going to take us on in about what's happening tomorrow?
Okay, tomorrow we have Jason Lisby coming on. The topic is community awareness. And if you want to join, come right on in like you did this evening, anybody. And anybody listening that's going to listen to this recording, every week, Tuesdays and Wednesdays, we have shows.
Okay. Well, again, Dr. Allen, you know, you say you'll be out here Saturday. I hope I'll get a chance to see you. And then second, Kuma's birthday is on the 24th of this month. And okay. He's going to be celebrating it out here too. Not out here, but, you know, in special places, him and his wife. And so that it's a beautiful thing. And I just want to thank everyone, especially my friend and colleague and archive of the McBride, Ernest McBride history. In Long Beach, Brother Ernest, named after his father, along with Mashinda, who's in the deep, deep, dirty South, as he calls it, and Brother Ahi in deep, deep Detroit, where they had a rebellion, and they took a tank in Detroit in 1967, and when the troops came in, they couldn't come in with no bullets. You know, they were serious in Detroit. And Sister Linda out of deep Florida, when she was telling me that they're making an attack on HBCUs by DeSantis appointing a new president and some other vice president that's trying to just destroy the whole concept of HBCUs under the Trump administration. And it's not just Trump, it's the Congress and the courts that allow him to do what he's doing. Absolutely. And more focus need to be on that. He's here for 4 years. Get after them senators and those congressmen that's enable him and quit mentioning Trump every 5 minutes on TV. Mm-hmm. You know, he couldn't do half the things he's doing. And that they supposed to be the safeguard. Talk about the breakdown in the safeguard. But, Dr. Allen, you know how much I appreciate you coming. And keep doing what you're doing. And I know you're going to be even more successful than what you are. All right, then.
That's an honor. Thank you for having me.
All right, then. I'll see everybody. You know, I got work to do in the morning. I got my dialogue.